And welcome to another episode of the Geeks and Chairs. It's me, your boy Eli.
It's me, Joe.
And we're talking about Ant-Man Quantumania, the first movie of Phase 5 of Marvel. A movie that we've been kind of itching, I would say, no?
It's been, because we know that this movie would be the first to officially introduce the big bad for this sort of new saga from Marvel, the multiverse saga. Which is Kang the Conqueror.
And, well, not to say that we haven't met a Kang, but we did meet a variant of Kang.
Yeah, pretty much the one that we know, like, is going to be sort of the headliner. Because we, you know, ever since Loki, we've known that, like, Kang is going to be involved in some form or fashion. Could be seen a variant of him, you know? The one that was controlling the TVA. He was a variant of Kang. And now we have sort of the big Kang here.
So, yes. By the way, I was trying to remember his name. It was He Who Remains. I knew it was something like
weird. It was like some sort of weird, like...
Not a name, but a title. Yes, but so essentially what we're going to do right now, we're going to give each of our thoughts on the film, further explain them as we go along, and then we give our rating at the end. So, the way you used to do it is we do just like a 1 minute review from each one of us. And, Joe, you're going to be the first one to start off. So, whenever you're ready, buddy.
Okay. So, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumanium is a very solid movie. You get a lot of, you know, Paul Rudd's, on his game, Michael Douglas is always a fun character. Honestly, kind of forget Michelle Pfeiffer's, Janet Van Dyne, but yeah, it's a solid movie. You know, you sort of get like this neat little plot that has them, being trapped in the quantum realm, having to escape, various drama because, Janet knows of the danger, Kang, and he's pretty much... sort of a very interesting villain. We got to see some other stuff going on as well. The visuals were all right, I believe. Overall, Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumanium is a solid movie with some fun dialogue, and it's honestly what you expect from an Ant-Man movie at this point. So, lots of quips, some fun action, you know.
Yes. I like the way you said that. All right, so I guess it's that leads it to me. So, Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania is a movie that it's very much a Marvel movie. That's not a jab or a negative. I think it's very much what you expect an Ant-Man Marvel movie to be. It does follow a lot of the things that you kind of associate with Ant-Man. The idea of the quantum realm itself is a great idea. I love the designs. I love the look of the quantum realm. That's something I was really happy to see. Though some of the CGI on it did not look so good. And some of the actors felt a little stiff. Jonathan Majors clearly steals the show as Kang. And obviously the introduction of a certain Marvel villain is also a great thing to see. And yeah, the setups are being made. I think that's the thing I could easily say that's great about this movie. This is a good setup for Kang and his future endeavors in the MCU. All right, so where do we want to start off? Do you want to start off with the negatives that we have for this movie?
I guess we can talk about, because I mean, like I said, it's a solid movie, not a perfect, not a great movie.
Yeah.
Just solid all around. Like, again, that's not a bad thing. But I can kind of understand where some people are kind of iffy on it. Granted, the Ant-Man movies have always been kind of...
Hit or miss.
People liked the first one because it was just kind of like a little fun sort of movie. You know, a little heist movie mixed with Marvel stuff, you know. And the second one was... I remember it was all right. Had an all right sort of villain too, but it was just kind of like kind of all over the place.
It felt like we were meandering.
Yeah, it just felt like it was kind of like one of those filler movies, And I think most people remember the Ant-Man and the Wasp movie mainly for the post-credit scene more than anything. Because, you know, it's like, hey, Ant-Man, he's going to go get some quantum energy from the quantum realm or something like that or whatever. And then he gets stuck because guess what? Hope, Hank, and Janet all get dusted. You know, so it's one of those, like, big shocking, oh, my God. You know, it's like, oh, we were going to have, like, a little fun little movie that wasn't going to do much with the current MCU at the time. And then it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to end it back where we, you know, where the rest of the universe has been at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, no, and this one, yeah, it has, I would say, I think it's better paced and more focused in terms of, like, oh, hey, Cassie built a thing that's trying to, like, see into the quantum realm without them going into it, but it's caught the attention of a certain person, you know, a certain villain in the quantum realm, and now he's pretty much like, I want revenge on Janet, you know, because X amount of things happened while she was in there. So, yeah, there's that, and I think it's sort of overall like a, all right, they get stuck into a strange place, and they have to pretty much escape because, you know, Kang's there, and he's pretty
much a
ticking time bomb, right?
Yeah, no, it's funny you say ticking time bomb. Kang is himself is a time, you know, user.
Yeah, a person who uses time travel very well.
Yeah, and it kind of gives off a bit of a Dr. Manhattan vibes in the way he speaks. But he's not like Dr. Manhattan because Kang himself is a very, like, very weird, very almost inconsistent character in reality. Because Kang the Conqueror has had many names. And in the way they introduce him in the movie is like it's just different variants, which makes sense, right? That makes it a lot more easier to understand. But he's always been kind of a questionable, like, kind of a goofy, not that much of a serious threat of a villain for the Avengers. I mean, there are obviously there's different interpretations to go with. I think Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and maybe this one is probably one of the better interpretations of Kang in media. But to see him in this film, for this movie, with so much focus, like you were saying, because, like, I think it was Ghost that was in the last one?
Yeah, it was Ghost, and she was more of, like, not a villain per se, but more so of, like,
a victim of circumstance.
Yeah. But no, I will say that, sorry. The interesting thing about the story is that, you know, that is at least much more paced out well. But in terms of, like, I guess the negatives about it, I think for me personally, it's more so on certain plot elements within the story. Mainly sort of like, I guess, Scott's whole thing, where, not that I have an issue with him, like, sort of being like, you know, like, you know, I'm just sort of hanging out now, just writing books about my life and stuff. It's more sort of like, they give him, like, this weird sort of arc, where since they're stuck in the quantum realm, Casey has been, or Cassie, no, it's Cassie, right?
Cassie, I was going to say, wait, who are you talking about?
Now, Cassie is very, like, you get to learn a bit about her character, just, she's very much like her dad, a bit of a rebel, getting into trouble, actually been put in jail for a little bit, but she's mainly just doing it just for, like, I want to help people, you know, that sort of thing.
And, like, Dad, you help people, I would just want to do the same thing.
Yeah, and then sort of they learn the plight of the various quantum realm people having been conquered by Kang the Conqueror. And, you know, he's like, hey, listen, all right, first and foremost, I got to get you home, you know.
That's the most important thing to do. Yeah, dude.
We got to get ourselves back home. This isn't really sort of our fight kind of thing. And that's sort of like the kind of the character he kind of is given for a little bit of like, hey, listen, this isn't our thing. This isn't our this isn't our problem. Sorry about what's happening, but we gotta, like, get out of here, right? And, you know, Cassie's very, like, look, what the hell, man? I think it's just kind of there just to, like, introduce a bit of, like, conflict between, you know, obviously the two, because she's very much like, you're my hero, you know, you're always going out helping people, but it's like,
you saved the world, man.
Yeah, and it's like,
it's a really good idea, but it's not explored as much as we both would like, because we had this conversation about it on the way here, that it just didn't feel all fleshed out as much. Mm-hmm. For me, the thing that really held it back with that storyline was the actress playing Cassie herself. Not to say she's like a terrible actress. No, she's fine. Is that there's a lot of times where I feel like she's kind of have that lost look in her eyes, like she doesn't know what she's doing, and she's kind of, and it kind of like holds her back from a lot of moments where I feel like she needs to like emote a little more. She's very stiff, is what I want to say, mm-hmm. in her acting.
Yeah, I mean, granted, I feel like a chunk of the reasoning for that might just be, because, I mean, obviously, when you watch the movie, like, you can tell that a majority of it's filmed on, like, in green, you know, essentially on a big green stage, right? Mm-hmm. From all this, you know, there's barely any practical sets they use. Maybe, like, a couple I can think of from the scenes I remember. But, yeah, I mean, that's probably hard for a lot of actors. I mean, I remember there was a story with Ian McKellen.
Mm-hmm.
During the filming of the Hobbit movies, where he sort of just like very like tired out by just having to stand in front of green screens and just imagine like what the hell's going on. So I can imagine like for her, it's somewhat of a similar, like, okay, I just got to pretend something's going on here.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe that's why she has that sort of weird look in her eyes. Mm-hmm. I guess as you described it, as well as just like maybe a harder time, like trying to get into whatever scene she needs to get into. Cause she's, you know, having to imagine some stuff and probably, like, I don't know. Like, I didn't exactly, I mean, I don't know. I thought she was all right, but I definitely understand why you would feel that she's very stiff in terms of, like, her acting. Mm-hmm. Of, like, oh, like.
Yeah.
You know, like, she's, oh.
Yeah, and I'm sure she's done a lot more emotional role. I do think that's what it is. I think it's just that, like, she herself is not used to the that kind of thing, you know, working within like a majority of green screen. Like, yeah, I heard of the Ian McKellen thing too, and like, yeah, I think he's somebody who was like, I didn't even get it. This is not what a guy is acting for.
Yeah,
but I mean, I say the good thing though is that it's supposed to parallel the story between those two and like Janet, Hope, and Hank, because like obviously Janet has been living in the quantum realm for however many years?
30 years, I think she said.
Yeah, 30 years, and, like, she doesn't want to talk about anything of that.
Yeah, and it's sort of a point of contention between the characters of, like, why aren't you telling us things? Why didn't you, you know, it's like, you know, why, you know, every time we always ask about it, you always ready, you know, it's like, this is the reason why, you know?
Yeah, I was like, we just happened to move on to another topic out of nowhere. So it's, I think it's, you know, that's kind of the whole point of that. That the through line for that is just this, you know,
like it, you know, like family dynamics are being tested. I'm guessing mm-hmm. is sort of like the big thing throughout the mm-hmm. movie of like, hey, you know, we treat each other as a family at this point. Heck, Cassie's calling a Hank grandpa, even though she's not her actual grandpa.
No, and I love that.
It is kind of a funny thing too, because he's very much like, oh yeah, I like, and, you know, I've been like showing her some stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like one of those neat little things about it.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, yeah, all right. So it's very clear to like, okay, this is like, you know, we have an ant family, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, like the bat family, except it's with ants.
Yeah.
I will say, I think one of my other, to at least round up, I guess, my sort of issues with the film, I think sort of like the last issue I probably had was, so there is like, from the trailers, you get this sort of feeling of like, that potentially there's going to be a plot line involving Kang and Scott where it's like, you know, I am a master of time, Scott. I can give you back what you want, you know? And we do get a little bit of, like, Scott being like, you know, I'm sorry I missed out on, you know, a good chunk of your life, Heat Cassie. You know, they sort of make mention it every now and again, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it feels like that might be what something's going to be leading to. He's going to be like this sort of like... Scott might be tempted by the devil, if you will, to make a contract.
I did think that's what it was, but it's also just, I think, the way the movie was marketed.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Because the movie clearly wants to market the fuck out of Kang. And we'll talk about Kang in a minute, obviously. And that's kind of like a very important scene, but like it does, like, it gives you the implication of it being a very important moment, but it's kind of not.
At least the actual scene where they're talking face to face.
Yeah. Like, but you can also understand, you know, why, you know, Scott would eventually be like, hell no.
I mean, yeah, obviously, I think for most people, I think it would be generally like, yeah, no, Scott's always going to be like, no, to that deal or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have been, I'm just saying, it feels like it's a bit of like a wasted plot line.
Yeah. You know? I think that's what it is, too. And, like, for me, I would say another negative that I have, and I think I've said this before, the CGI on it has not looked great. Granted, I think it's because, like, this is very CGI heavy, as you were saying. But, like, you know, the way that the Quantum Realm is designed, from the look of the creatures to some of the, you know, characters. Well, some of them are, like, a little kind of goofy, in my opinion. Some of them have really great designs, especially the creatures.
Mm-hmm.
I love the creature designs in this one, and you know that's amazing. But there are times where, and this is more from the human actors, they don't blend well with the backgrounds. You can tell, like, okay, this is, you know, the green screen line is there, kind of stuff. Especially in moments where they have to like shrink down and, you know, go back up, and I think it's just like super CGI heavy, where it's like it's looking a little obvious. There's a moment specifically with Scott where it's like, okay, I can tell you just kind of, it feels like you just kind of copy and paste different Scotts here and there, and just the way he kind of looks around it. And granted, it's probably because like that is a lot of work, and it's gonna trying to make it like blend all together look realistic is gonna take a lot longer. So, I mean, that's an issue I have. It just does not look great in some parts sometimes, but sometimes it looked fantastic. Like, the backgrounds looked amazing. There's a sequence with the Pym family where they're flying on, like, essentially...
Some giant
stingray-looking thing.
Yeah.
And it looks great. It looks amazing. So that's kind of, like, the thing about it. Like, the CGI can be good when it's good. But when it's bad, it's very noticeable sometimes.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, that's mostly from my eye. I know you didn't really notice it that much.
Yeah, I think when you told me about the scene in question, I'm like, I didn't actually notice what you were noticing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, granted, I don't really know if it's just because I wasn't looking for it or if it wasn't that obvious to me. Because, I don't know, I feel like when it comes to special effects for me, if it's, like, yeah, I can probably notice a bad effect when I see one.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm pretty sure I can also, I'm just like, in my brain, I think I'm more focused on, like, what's happening in the story and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I know the effects they use for this one Marvel villain that I think you might have mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looks weird, but at the same time, like, there was really no good way of, like, making that design.
Oh, yeah, we're talking about MODOK, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, MODOK is obviously, well, I think it's, like, pretty obvious he's in the movie. He's been in, like, a lot of shots, and a lot of people are talking about it. He looks off, but at the same time, I don't know if that's just how MODOK is in general, or just like...
Yeah, dude's a giant floating head with tiny arms and baby legs. Mm. Like, I know the Avengers game tried it pretty damn hard to like make him, you know, at least look alright in like a real world aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I feel like I just like the design of the MODOK in this movie way more.
Well, you know what it is? Is that the and a lot of people have been saying that the Avengers game had like a really good design for MODOK, and I'm just like, I don't think so. It doesn't look right in my opinion.
Yeah.
But this one is like, oh no, this is like straight out of the comic kind of thing, kind of look.
Yeah.
And it works.
Like, it weirdly enough, it works.
And like the actor playing MODOK, I'm like, oh my god, this is perfect. He should have been playing MODOK the whole time.
You know, yeah, it's kind of funny how like they integrate MODOK into the story, because obviously like in the comics he's built by AIM and stuff like that. Here he is pretty much I won't get into like exactly his origin, but pretty much Kang is involved with it, and it honestly makes a lot of sense considering how Kang has been,
in
the future he has all this tech, and that's sort of his like gimmick, right? Like he's from the future, he has all this like tech that's pretty much like, you could argue it might be even magic, if you will, but he's just like what, from the 25th century or something like that?
The far century.
Yeah.
So it's obviously that we're going to get stuff like that with him. But like I said, MODOK looks weird, but then again, I'm like, that's MODOK, though.
Yeah, like, they could have gone, because there is, like, he has, like, this faceplate mask on him to hide in the face.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, which I feel like might have been what they might have wanted to do, because he is a, what is it? What's the acronym? Because MODOK is an acronym.
Yeah, mechanical organism designed only for killing.
Yeah. So they could have just went the route of like, oh, he's just a pure robot with a giant face kind of thing. But no, they have him, he has a straight up face. And to be fair, everyone acknowledges that he looks weird. Everyone's like, what the hell is this?
Because that's not the only way you would react to MODOK.
It's like, what the hell?
Like, there's numerous, like, characters in Marvel, even in DC, too, that are just weird looking to be weird, right? That's kind of their whole, like, shtick. And so, like, him just automatically looking weird and everyone acknowledging he looks weird is just, like, totally normal, in my opinion. Like, if I were to take someone who's never seen a Marvel movie, better yet, has never read a Marvel comic, I was like, here's MODOK. And they'd be like, what the hell is this? This big giant head with tiny little arms and tiny little legs.
It has these, rockets and, like, lasers attached to them and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, yeah, I think that's what I think makes MODOK work in this movie, in my opinion, is that everyone sort of has just a realistic reaction to him of just like, Jesus Christ, what the... Because, I mean, like, I think at the end of the day, that's kind of like... I think that's the real magic sauce for Marvel, honestly, is that the movies acknowledge that, yeah, this is some weird shit, but it's here, and we're just going to have to deal with it. You know?
I kind of wish they'd do that more, to be honest, with some of their, like, weirder characters. Because sometimes it's like, okay, this is a little weird, and we're just going to, like, kind of modernize it. MODOK was not modernized. He was just straight pulled out of the comic.
Yeah, and I think...
all that was missing was the hair.
Yeah, I guess, because he normally does have hair, but
yeah.
I guess it's just more aesthetically, like, he's a giant head, so I'm guessing it just looks kind of neat, more cooler that he's bald.
And you know what? It works.
Yeah.
It totally works. Now that we talked about MODOK, obviously we're going to go talk about the big bad himself, Kang the Conqueror. And Kang, played by Jonathan Majors, obviously, we've talked about this, you've probably heard it from all around, yeah, he steals the show. He is probably one of the best things about the movie, and his acting is really great. His actions are both menacing and like he is a terrifying man. He sets a presence.
Yeah, I really do think if there's one thing Marvel is doing well is setting up Kang and making him like a believable like. Endgame level threat, right?
Yeah.
Like, because I think the one thing you could say about Thanos is that, not counting Infinity War, he's kind of just, like, there in the background.
Yeah.
Of a lot of things.
He only showed up in Avengers 1 at the end, at the mid-credits. And just being like, oh, you know, to face the Avengers, you are to court death. And
he like, just turns around and like, smiles. Like, he's like,
oh, that gets me.
Yeah, and then you see him a little bit in Guardians, where he's just kind of like there, floating in his chair, you know, all that stuff. And then you get him again in the Avengers 2 mid-credits, where he's like, fine, I'll do it myself. You know, it isn't until Infinity War that we actually, you know, get Thanos and his motivations and why he does the things he does, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here, like, I think Marvel is sort of like, kind of like jumping, not jumping the, ahead, but more like having
Kang just be there. They're setting it up.
They're like, they're doing like, pretty like hands-on setup of like, this is Kang.
This is what's he about. This is why you should be worried about him. And this is, he is going to be our endgame level threat. Right? Because like, with Infinity War, we that's our first time ever really meeting Thanos.
Like, we've seen him before and he's done stuff in the background.
The joke has always been, all he does is sit on a chair.
Yeah, it's not until Infinity War then people are like, oh, okay, Thanos is pretty freaking cool.
You get a motive, you get a reasoning, and you get a desire from, like, from Thanos. He wants to collect the stones. Why? He wants to, you know, eliminate half of the universe. And why does he want to do that? Because he wants to, you know, it's resources. Now, some people might say, oh, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do this? This isn't that. I think the fact that he's willing, that the only thing in his mind is to kill half of the, you know, universe of living organisms should tell you that he does, that reason was never an option.
No, right? Because I think he would even probably just say, then that just leads to more and more and more and more. There's clearly, you know, he's like, it's never going to stop, you know, expanding. Why don't we just, you know, go to straight to the source and just be like, snap all, like half of all living creatures in the universe to conserve those resources.
Yeah, and but now with Kang, because Kang we've been introduced in Loki, well, a variant of Kang, right?
Yeah.
But it sets up the threat of one that would eventually be, you know, the stuff we see in Kang Dynasty / Secret Wars, you know, and all this multiversal stuff. That was kind of further later explained in, you know, Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. And now we get this that really sets up the, the big multiversal threat. But also why Kang is such a villain to watch out for. You know? Because by the time, you know, we're introduced to Kang proper, I might say. Because, see, this is the Kang proper. You can argue that, you know, the one who remains is, you know, so-and-so. But, like, this is Kang proper, and this is what he's about. And you're like, oh, okay. You know, this isn't his Infinity War movie. This is leading up to his Infinity War movie.
Yeah, I mean, heck, it's very clear
that
Kang is just very, very strong and powerful. And just, you know, Ant-Man and Wasp, they can't handle him. They are barely able to, like, do enough to him. They have to pretty much enlist a whole, you know, it takes a whole army, if you will, to take him down. And even then, he's like,
nah. He's still standing.
Yeah, so I think it's neat, because it's like, he's not entirely invincible, because obviously what made Thanos crazy is that not only is he strong, but once he has, you know, once he starts collecting all those stones and stuff, it makes him real threatening. And obviously you don't have that sort of, like, ability to mess with space, time, and reality and all that stuff anymore with a villain.
Mm.
But you do have, you know, like I said, a guy who from the future who straight up has, like, pretty much projectiles that can just disintegrate anyone. He can redirect blasts and then, like, you know, he's basically doing magic almost, if you will, but it's tech.
Yeah. He is, it's one of those, was that joke that they made in Thor, like, oh, to you guys it's magic, but to us it's science.
Yeah, kind of, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
He's on that level of tech, you know?
Yeah. And, like, he's, like I said, he's established as a threat. The level of stuff that he's able to do, even so, kind of just makes it go like, oh, shit. Oh, damn.
It definitely makes you wonder, like, all right, so it's pretty much, we've only gotten a taste of his power. Like, what happens when we see him, like, fully, like, with all, like, with everything he has, right?
Yeah. And, like, this is the thing that really gets me with Kang, right? The movie itself, you know, it's pretty okay-ish, but the setup for him is great. And then you look at all the other stuff, like, oh, this has always been setting up for him since, like, day one. You can even argue, like, since Endgame, because Endgame's like, oh, yeah, we're introducing time travel. And all people are like, oh, but that's, you know, that's so cheap, you know. And I'm like, but wait, if they do it this way, with this certain villain, it could work. And god damn it, they knew. I'm not saying they knew since, like, the beginning of Endgame kind of stuff. But, like, you can argue, like, that was, like, a little seed that will eventually grow into this big giant tree that is Kang and the branches of, you know, the timeline that he has to mess with.
I mean, yeah, I feel like that is sort of another, like, one of the other great strengths of Marvel movies is that, you know, you don't have to watch all the stuff and not everything is like a setup.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause obviously, like, you know, the Avengers time traveling in Endgame, right? You know, that could have easily just been like maybe a one-time thing and then be like, oh, we'll never do that again. You know, that's too dangerous and stuff. But, you know, like you said, that stuff is always like, was always probably maybe a seed so that if they wanted to do, hey, you know what? Let's do Kang. How do we do that? Oh, we already just literally established time travel and that's his big thing that he likes to do. Travel to different timelines and mess around and stuff. So, yeah, that's clearly a way we can handle that, you know?
Mm-hmm. And so, like, seeing it all turn out, like I'm very interested to see how Kang is. And you kind of get, like I said, you kind of start seeing, like, all the eventual, like, you know, seeds of what they have planned for him later on. Because I'm not going to spoil it too much, but, like, the mid-credit scene sets up a lot more for Kang than anything else. And so we're at the wait and see kind of stuff. And I'm very excited to see, you know, his future endeavors in this. And Jonathan Majors looks like he's having fun with his role.
No, I definitely agree. You know, because if you look into Kang and, like, the character, you can tell, like, that's... He's going to have a lot of fun playing all the various variants that Kang, that are in, you know, the various variants of Kang that are out there, you know?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, oh, Jesus, I can't wait to see that. Is there anything else you want to talk about when it comes to this movie? Before we give our rating.
Not, I don't know. I can't think of much. I think I said my piece, I feel like, mm-hmm. for the most part. I will admit, it is kind of, there is, like, an interesting plot point of, like, hey, there's a juice, or, like, a liquid or something, that our main characters have to drink in order to understand, you know, all these characters, which I feel like is, like, it's something that's not usually mentioned a lot of times, because I know in Guardians...
Mm-hmm.
They mentioned how there's, like, you know, this thing that allows everybody to, like, understand each other. I think Peter mentions he has, like, some sort of, like, ear thing or whatever that allows him to, like, understand and, mm-hmm. you know, feedback, that stuff. So it is kind of neat. There is, like, that's a thing, too, but for the quantum realm, where it's, like, oh, they're all talking this weird language and stuff. You don't know what the hell they're saying, but once, you know, Scott drinks the juice, it's, like, Oh, I understand you now. That's weird.
It's a little, like, a weird, like, a plot device, but...
I mean, yeah.
I think it's fine.
I'm pretty sure it'd be... There's probably gonna be some friggin' internet critic out there that's being like, how can they understand each other? How do they even learn to speak English and stuff? And it's like, most people don't care, but this is probably for, like, the one thing for, like, those types of people, you know?
Yeah. Do you want to give your rating on this movie?
Yeah, I think overall, I feel like I would give this Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumanium, like, I feel like, for the most part, the good stuff that I liked about it kind of outweighs a lot of the problems I have with it. Because, like I said, it's a solid movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's probably around, like a 7 for me. You know?
I'm very much on board with that. I feel like this is a very, like, solid movie. It doesn't do anything really spectacular or anything, like, groundbreaking, but it doesn't do anything that's offensive or, you know, bad. I think it's just very much straightforward. Like, I think I've said this before about the Iron Man movies. They've always been pretty solid. Like, they're not terrible, they're not great, but they're just pretty okay. So this kind of just goes into the whole, you know, thing with Ant-Man. It's pretty okay.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been better if they had Louise, but, you know, that's a different story.
That is true. It's probably the first movie where you don't have, you know, those side characters from the first two. But to be fair, how the hell are we going to fit these guys into that movie? Unless they also got sucked in, and at that point, it's like, what?
That'd be horrible.
Yeah.
It'd be just them screaming at everything, and I don't want to hear that. I love those three, by the way. I love them.
Their strength is obviously never getting that involved in the superhero shenanigans, right?
Yeah. Especially, like, Louise, because, you know, don't get me wrong, I love Louise. He's probably one of my favorite, you know, characters to introduce. Especially with his little joke of, like, all right, man, let me tell you the whole story. Then you hear the... Like, he was one of my favorites, yeah. But I also totally understand why he's not in here. But I like the idea that, you know, that Ant-Man himself has this sort of new family with him, his daughter, and, like, the Ant family, which we're just going to call it nowadays. And, you know, how supportive they are of each other. It's great to see that. I really wish they did more of that. But, you know, like, it worked some areas, it worked and not in others. But overall, I do agree that this movie is more of a 7 out of 10 kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Anyways, guys, I think that's a good place to end it. If you like what you heard, be sure to follow us on all social medias, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. At The Geeks and Trainers, we're more selective on Instagram. And we'll have a link to all podcast sites we're officially part of, like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and all the like. And you'll find a link to the YouTube where all you audio listeners out there can put a face to the voice, like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. And be sure to support us on Patreon. It's really just there for any kind of form of support. And yeah, guys, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. It's pretty solid. If you're going to watch it for Kang. That's all I got to say. He might not be in there for much. I'm just letting you guys know that right now. But he is a show stealer.
Nah, yeah, he's very, I'm looking forward to
mm-hmm.
Kang and his further adventures, because after all, Kang will return.
Because we're setting his ass up. He's got a movie named after him, Joey.
Yeah.
All right, it's been me, your boy, Eli.
It's been me, Joe.
You guys have a good one. Peace.